You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 3. Yeah, commuting sucks, but these guys don't.
Well, that's what people are wondering. If this guy is so sure of his own, you know, self-esteem, he's like, forget it, man. I'll post them myself right on the front page of the Washington Post. No, it's the opposite. He will see you at the Supreme Court
He's worth, what, $100 billion?
I will take you all the way to the Supreme Court.
This is Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog on TSN 1050.
Final hour Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app, now up on TSN 2. Brian Hayes, Darren Detition.
Just the Bezos story. You know, richest cat in the world, he gets busted. I like how he got out in front of it, though. He's like, all right, you're not going to, no.
Yeah, pretty incredible, isn't it? Like, honestly, the guy who owns Amazon, the guy who is the richest human being on earth by a significant portion, he can be subjected to blackmail and extortion, and he can take D-picks and they can get out.
That's the point. Like, his security, you think his phone would be so encrypted. Like, if his security's not tight, no other individual is. But,
kidding. Boom. That's why, like, if no one condones this type of activity, no one should be the victim of their privacy being breached. It is a gutless portion of what our society has become. But if his fortress can be penetrated, yours can easily be picked
100%.
Apart.
But I do like the fact he was like, no. You think you're going to get me? Here it is.
I'm going to out myself. That's right.
Deal with it.
I got a mistress, and we were firing up picks, and this is what happened. Yeah. So there you go. Shout out to Jeff Bezos. I just saw our boy Dave Naylor over there. It's a big day in the CFL. We haven't talked about this.
Indeed.
But Bo Levi Mitchell is back in the CFL. He's back in Calgary. And Mike Riley is now leaving Edmonton, and he's off to BC.
And then Trevor Harris is subsequently gone to Edmonton.
Right.
And so that's...
And my understanding is the Argos have done nothing. Like, they don't even know that the free agency opened today. So that'll be great. That's what they need. They're coming off a dumpster fire of a season. They could use some help. Yeah. But
Saskatchewan was kind of hoping that they were going to get Bo Levi, but that did not happen. And I guess his foray into the National Football League, he's like, nope, not happening.
Which, you know, I'd like to get the details on that because he worked out for eight teams,
I
believe.
He did. Clearly, he wasn't good enough.
Yeah, I think that's basically what it comes 100%. Down to. Like, you're not... Because... He may have been good enough to get a practice squad spot. I doubt it at his age. I doubt it. And he would have been paid less than he's going to be paid in Calgary.
Right.
But you would hope, you know, the MOP, the best quarterback in the league, he and Riley have been great in past years. But Bo Levi Mitchell, I think, has been on a different level, would be able to sniff out second, third tier options. And clearly it just didn't happen.
No.
You know, so, but listen, the NFL, they miss out.
Exactly.
The NFL, this is a great day if you're a Canadian Football League fan.
And it's a great day for the Calgary Stampeders. They get to keep the best quarterback, arguably, in the league, along with Mike Riley, and Edmonton loses theirs. Now, having said that, Riley goes to BC, and British Columbia is going to be significantly better this year because of it. I was like, well, why would he do that? I asked Farhan last night because it didn't seem to make sense to me because of the fact that Edmonton was willing to match the four-year, $700,000 per year contract. And it's he's from Washington, so it was all family related. His family still lives
down
there
in Seattle,
during the course of the regular season. So when he's up there grinding in Edmonton and playing football, his family is quite a ways away. So now he's in Vancouver. It's a 2.5 hour drive. You know that makes absolute sense.
We got your boy Steve Phillips on the line.
I love it.
Do you want to bring in Steve?
Yeah,
bring
he's
us back
the best.
To the ALCS back
100%.
In 15 and 16. You guys doing damage down at the Rogers Center?
Yep, those were the good old days. Joey Bats. I'll never forget that as long as I live. It's one of the most memorable events I've ever been at in my entire life. When he rocked that homer and then he flipped his bat and did his little pimp walk, it was remarkable. How are you, Steve?
Hey, guys, good to be with you, man. What a treat, Dutchie on today. Man.
That's
wow.
what I'm saying. Oh, yeah, no, it's man. My pleasure. Are you kidding? You're the best. Hey, I have a question for you. No, you know what I like about Phillips?
How nostalgic is this? Yeah, Dutchie's just going to start ranting about something.
No, you know what I like about this? You know what I like about Steve? Everything. Even if he's a Michigan fan. Yeah, the guy's quality.
Go blue.
Okay, yeah. Question for you, though. What's going on? Like, explain this to me, please, because I'm old enough to remember when Major League Baseball was actively involved in collusion, and they actually went to court, and they were found guilty of it. But now we've got over 100 free agents. You got Manny Machado, you got Bryce Harper, you got 26-year-olds who are conceivably in their prime, and they're not getting signed. So please break it down for me, if you could.
Well, here's the thing: is that this, you know, everybody, the players keep saying, "Well, the owners aren't spending money." I mean, the reality is that Bryce Harper turned down a 10-year deal for beyond $300 million. He thought he was going to get more, and he hasn't gotten an offer close to that. From any indication out there right now, he has not gotten an offer. And so, like, he's not a victim. He made a bad decision.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he got a $300-plus million offer and said no to it, thinking and wishing he was going to get more, and it's not there. Look, what's happened is this. Part of it is timing, bad timing. And part of it is, you know, so you've got a lot of teams that are rebuilding. And even the, for the rebuilding teams, like Harper and Machado don't really want to go there because they're going to spend the next 3 years kind of getting their teeth kicked in, hoping to win after that. And those teams are looking at it saying, you know, I don't want to do a 10-year deal because, you know, so Justin Verlander came out and said, I don't understand it. Seems to me that 26 to 36 is a good window for a player. Well, he's wrong. That the reality is that analytics are making it clear, and listen, everybody in Toronto lived it with Jose Bautista when remember, he wanted the five-year, $150 million extension with Josh Donaldson, who's now going to free agency at 33, and realized that when you get to 32, 33, 34, 35, 36, you're not the same player you were when you were 26. And so teams are saying, we're willing to spend money on players. And I'm willing to do 7 years on Harper and Machado and give them $35 million a year, $30 million a year. I'm willing to do that. For that eighth, ninth, and tenth year, I'm willing to spend $35 million in those years too for a player. Just not this guy who's going to be 32, 33, 34 years old. I want the next young guy and give him the money. And so effectively what players are mad at is that teams aren't making the same mistakes they used to.
Right.
That's what they're throwing a fit about and what they're frustrated about. And that's what Harper and Machado are holding out for, is they want to get paid at 32, 33, 34, 35, the same way they're going to get paid at 26 through 32. And teams are reluctant to do that.
Well, what I find, you know, interesting about this and the idea of some, you know, collusion, I don't know if we can go that far. No. I don't know how you could ever prove it. But historically, and this isn't exclusive to baseball, this happens in every league. At some point, you get a GM who convinces his owner, who cares about the final 3 years? Let's make sure we get there right first and get the player. You know, and that wasn't about analytics. They knew it at the time. You know, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, GMs would be like, yeah, I don't know what he's going to look like in 7 years, but I know what he's going to look in years 1 through 6. So when did that change?
Yeah, that changed over the last couple of years. Here's what happened. It used to be that as a general manager, I used my owner as the bad guy. Like, I always wanted to give more money, but my owner would say no. And I'd say, listen, I can't do it because my owner just won't let me give me more money. And it allowed me to keep the sort of negotiation going with the agent to hope that I could still find a way to make a deal. What's changed now is that agents try to get to owners because they figured, oh, if the owner's the bad guy, let me go to the owner. Let me go to the owner and see if I can't get him because he's the last line of defense. And like, what's he going to say? Well, my wife won't let me do it, right? My wife's not going to let me give you the extra $100 million or whatever. And so what's happened now is that owners have said, listen, there's got to be something more scientific about this. It can't be just this subjective, you know what, he's going to be this and that. And the teams used to negotiate with emotion. What's happened is analytics have taken the emotion out of it. And when agents go to owners now, owners will say, listen, I'm not smart enough to know if your guy's going to be good when he's 32 or 33 or 34. So my baseball guys tell me this is the value for your guy. We love him. We'd love to have him. But we're not smart enough to know if your guy is going to be one of those guys who at 35 is still going to be playing at an elite level. None of us know. And so we're going to treat all those guys the same. And that's what everybody's doing, is they're saying none of us are smart enough to guess. And here's the thing. We might have thought, well, Jose Bautista will be one of those guys. He'll be one. He keeps himself in great shape. He works hard at it. He cares about his profession. Well, he deteriorated rather quickly once he wanted that five-year, $150 million deal. And Josh Donaldson kept saying, I'm not that guy. Yeah, I had a calf strain, but I'm not that guy. I'm going to be healthy for the next 4 or 5 years. And then he wasn't. And so, you know, I think what's happened is, and then you look at all of the 10-year contracts that are out there. You look at Albert Pujols. Dan Lozano is looking at it saying, he's representing Manny Machado. He's saying, how can I not get 10 years for a 26-year-old when I got 10 years for a 31-year-old in Albert Pujols? Well, but how's it working out? Right? He's got 5 years left on his deal. Manny, and you look at Miguel Cabrera, who got the 8-year extension. He's got over $130 million left on his deal right now for 5 more years, but Cabrera does.
Yeah.
And they're not going to get their money's worth out of it.
So you see it as more of a market correction. But how do you explain maybe not the 10-year guys, but some of the other free agents who have yet to sign? Is that just a trickle down? They're waiting for the big boys, and then and then the money will sort of sort itself out?
So here's what it is. That people say, oh, there's 100 free agents left out there. Well, you know, Harper, Machado are plan A. The rest of the guys are plan B, C, D, and E, and they're waiting to see, because if teams have $30 million a year to spend on a player and they don't get the player they want, they've got $30 million to spend, and so everybody's looking to cherry-pick some part of that money. So they don't want to sign. So I'll give you an example. Adam Jones and Carlos Gonzalez are two guys out there whose skills are deteriorating a little bit, and they're doing it at 32, 33 years old, right? They're not that old, but they're still not the same guys, which is reinforcing what everybody thinks about age. And they're looking at it saying, we could go to Cleveland, but and Cleveland may have made an offer because Cleveland needs some outfielders, but the Phillies, if they don't get Harper or Machado, they probably still need another outfielder. And Carlos Gonzalez is thinking, geez, maybe instead of going back to Colorado or going to Cleveland, maybe the Phillies will pay me more than those teams will. So he's waiting. Yeah, and Adam Jones is waiting. And so I think that they're all sort of hoping that there will be somebody left with money to spend on them.
Okay, but when does the game of chicken end? Because this is getting, the season's rolling.
It ends when the players want it to end, because the teams will make deals.
Okay, but Steve, when does the panic set in and the player phones his agent and say, listen, let's get this deal done already. We got pitchers and catchers reporting. I need to get grooving here.
You know what? I'm surprised it hasn't happened. Look, the Machado Harper thing, I don't know what they're waiting for. It's not like what Scott Boras is doing right now is he's doubled back on teams to try to pull other teams in that are coming in at any level. And that he wants to try to do is, even if it's at a 4-year deal, he'll get as many teams in, and then he'll try to play them against each other to add the 5th year, to add the 6th year, the 7th year, to try to build it back up to where he wants to go, because he can't work from the top down now. He's got to work from the bottom up and try to build it, and he started all over again. I mean, pulling the San Francisco Giants, what are the San Francisco Giants going to do with Bryce Harper? They're going to sign him to a 3-year deal. They're not going to win in the next 3 years. They're not as good as the Rockies or the Dodgers are. And so, it's just... And here's the thing. The other part of it is Boras and Lozano have a competition too. And neither of them wants to sign first. They want to wait and see what the other guy gets before they commit to a deal. And because they want to win in that head-to-head matchup as well, considering Machado was once represented by Boras and now is represented by Lozano.
Man. With Steve Phillips, our baseball analyst, I think it's been pretty clear the impact that analytics has had on baseball and sabermetrics, more so than any other sport, although the other sports are starting to catch up. Baseball was really spearheading this movement. And, you know, as you said, and I think it's become fairly clear, you know, now guys are getting paid simply based on wins above replacement and a couple of other analytics that they have in-house, and that's it. You know, it's simply objective. And I'm worried about that in terms of baseball, and I'm also wondered, I'm wondering how it got to this point from an ownership standpoint. Like you just pointed out, their role in all this, Steve, where, okay, let's say Bryce Harper is worth 8 wins a year, 7 wins a year, 5 wins a year, whatever it is. Okay, I got you. Games 1 through 162, but what is he worth in terms of ticket sales, in terms of TV deals, the amount of jerseys, the personality he brings? Like, is that just completely worthless now in baseball?
Well, it's not. Now, remember, any sort of jersey or hat that gets sold doesn't go specifically to the team. It goes to the central fund, and it's divided evenly among all 30 teams. So you don't get the benefit of your own star player selling his jersey. It's evenly divided in among the 30 clubs. Yes, so the Washington Nationals had Bryce Harper. If anybody knows his value, it would be them.
Right.
They made an offer. He said no. They went in another direction because he thought his value was greater than that. Scott Boras put the book together because he thought, I'll show everybody what his value is. Everybody's looking at, that doesn't mean anything to us. We're going to go with our analytics. We know he's a good player. But here's the thing. Bryce Harper was ranked 78th in WAR last year in baseball. 78th in WAR. Bryce Harper's not a top 10 player in baseball. If defensive metrics are to be believed, right? So, we look at the analytics on defense. it told us that J.D. Martinez was a designated hitter, really wasn't a really good fit for the National League. So National League team sort of stayed away from him. Do you understand that, that Bryce Harper's defensive metrics scream that he's a DH? Now, I think he's better than what the metrics indicate. He was the second worst defensive outfielder in baseball last year. And so part of this is, what is Bryce Harper? And if he's not a top 10 player in baseball, why should I make him the highest paid player in baseball? I mean, like really, the brand of Bryce Harper is bigger than the value of Bryce Harper as a player to me. And so I don't, you know, and I'm not paying for the fact that he's going to be on a T-Mobile commercial. I don't care. If he's on my team and he's on that commercial, it's not getting me anything. And so certainly, yeah, you like the to have your fans connect the guys, everything else. All I know is the Washington Nationals didn't win anything with him. Just like when Alex Rodriguez went to Texas, they didn't win anything with him. And here's the thing. The Dodgers can add Bryce Harper, but they don't have to because they're still going to win the National League West. The Yankees could add Bryce Harper, but they don't have to. They're going to the playoffs. It's a matter of whether they beat the Red Sox in the division or not.
Right.
And so you start looking at some of the Cubs. They can't afford it, but the reality is they've got a good shot to win their division even without them. And that logic that teams that are in first place are using is the same as the logic that of the teams that are rebuilding. Why should I spend $30 million a year if I can add Bryce Harper and I'm still going to come in last place? Why bother? And why should I spend on Bryce Harper $30 million if I'm going to come in first place without him? Why spend an extra $30 million to add him when he hasn't gotten the Nationals to a World Series championship? So why should I spend the money on him too?
With Steve Phillips, our Jays analyst, I got to get a Jays question in here before we let you go. Pitchers and catchers reporting in Dunedin this week. A lot of smoke surrounding Marcus Stroman throughout the offseason. Obviously, nothing came to fruition. How would you handicap the chances he's still a Blue Jay come opening day, come the trade deadline? I mean, where do you see this going with Stroman?
Yeah, I'd be really shocked if he's traded before opening day because, you know, everybody's basing their thinking that they might like Stroman better than the Blue Jays do. And that's not a good place for the Blue Jays to make a trade, right? They'd be selling low on Stroman. And so it really seems to me that there can't possibly be a deal to be made unless they think they just want addition by subtraction and moving him on. And he's not that much of a problem, right? He's not a problem. He's a high energy guy that every once in a while will tweet something or say something that everybody reacts to, but he's not working against everybody. So you like to have that energy around. I'd much rather see him go out there, pitch well, and then if there's a deal to be made, they'll make it at the trade deadline. So I think it's, you know, 95% he'll be there for opening day. Trade at the deadline may make some sense.
We're gearing up here, man. Pitchers and catchers. It's baseball season. We're looking forward to it.
It's snowing in Connecticut.
Are you kidding?
Awful. You should see it up here.
We're in freezing snow day. Rain, snow. Kids were off school. It's awful.
It's gross. We're all ready for the summer.
Yeah.
Great stuff, buddy. We'll do it again soon.
Suck it up, you too.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Steve. There's Steve Phillips, our Jays analyst, baseball analyst, pitchers and catchers, again, reporting league-wide and full camps opening up pretty much this time next week.
Mm-hmm. I like what he said about Stroman, too. I mean, you're not going to get anything from right now.
No, not now.
The biggest problem you got right now is his inconsistency, his ERA, and his health.
You need him to really come out of the gate strong, and then if you want to flip him, then that's obviously the time to do it. If he continues to sink, then you're sunk. Yep. You know, there's nothing you're going to be able to do with him. Bob McKenzie, your Hockey Insider. Geno Malkin, one game for his antics last night. That is a ridiculous ruling. I'm not even surprised, but it's still ridiculous. One game for that last night. What happened with Mikey DiPietro in Vancouver? And Leafs in Colorado tonight. We'll tee it up with Bob next. We'll get to our best bets brought to you by ProLine later in the hour. Maple Leafs in action tonight in Colorado, taking on the Avalanche. And I think a lot of the focus, as we've been saying, will be on the power play tonight. As long as they get on the power play, you have to believe they're going to break out at some point. They're long overdue. One of the worst power play runs I can remember this team going through in a long time. And Colorado is a team that you know, they got after the Leafs a few weeks ago at Scotiabank. And they haven't won a lot of games recently. One of them was in regulation against the Maple Leafs. So the Leafs are due for some retribution here. But, you know, it could be a little bit of a trap game. You're coming off two games over the weekend, emotional games. You're in Vegas tonight.
Yeah, like how are you doing emotionally? How are both of you guys doing? You guys still here? Are you already thinking of the crap tables?
I got a feeling.
Already thinking of blackjack? Got your American money? Made that exchange?
I've done it, but I got to be thinking that we're not heading out tomorrow on time.
I don't know how it works. I don't fly a lot, but you would have to think that there was a lot of cancellations today. A lot of things are going to have to be rescheduled. Wouldn't shock me if we're out till 7 p.m. tomorrow or something like that.
That's I'm kind of bracing for that, too.
But just, I would just hope that there's a heads up, because I don't like 8 a.m. to 7 p.m.
at
the
airport. That's what I'm saying, man. Like, they know better by now. They can get a read on what's going to happen tomorrow. Mm-hmm. They know the list. They know the number of flights. They have a good read on what's going on with the weather. Okay, if we get out at 7 p.m. tomorrow, so be it. But then we'll show up at 5 p.m. I don't want to be there at 8 in the morning.
I got my fingers crossed for you that things will work out. You can get into Vegas at a decent time and start to dangle.
Yeah, well, we're going to play some bets tomorrow. Oh, yeah. That's the plan.
And sports book?
There's only two games in the NHL tomorrow night. One of them is McDavid and the Oilers in Pittsburgh playing the Penguins. And now Malkin is not going to play tomorrow. A one-game suspension for that near maiming of Michael Raffel last night. But I don't even think it matters. Like, Pittsburgh's still going to be a massive favorite against Edmonton. And you see Koskinen is going tomorrow night. So Cam Talbot was the guy for like 48 hours, he was brutal.
Can you explain that to me?
No, I don't think Hitchcock has a clue what he's supposed to do.
Because, Brian, I didn't get it. They signed Koskinen, and the guy had played, 25 games?
They made it clear to him that he was going to be the guy for the rest of the year. Yeah. They explained that to Talbot.
And then they go with Talbot.
They deserve what they get. That's the bottom line. You want to be idiots? You get losses, and you deserve it.
How you doing, Bobby?
Good. How you doing, Dutch?
Awesome, man.
Bob? Nice. How are you?
Good, fellas.
Well, can you explain this? I don't know if you spoke.
Well, I think what happened too is they were showcasing Talbot because they thought they were going to trade him, and then he played really well, and then the other guy didn't play well, and now Talbot's playing better than the other guy, and the other guy's got the contract, and Talbot doesn't, and they still may have to trade Talbot at the deadline if they can find a spot. But the goalie markets are always voodoo, and there's not really a strong market for goalies.
Why Koskinen for 3 years when...
Yeah, at the time I didn't like the deal, and I like it less now, I guess. So
I mean, it might pan out, I don't know, but it would just
And the funny
odd.
Thing is, I mean, you know, it'll become convenient to say, well, it was Peter Chiarelli that did it, and obviously he was the general manager when they did. But they also said after Chiarelli was let go that it was an organizational decision and they felt comfortable with it. And they obviously, in my mind, you know, they put too much stock in, you know, Koskinen for the most part has been pretty good this year. But again, the number of years, the amount of money, and not that good. Oof. So now you're kind of locked in with him and I don't know.
Yeah, neither does Ken Hitchcock, because Koskinen is going tomorrow night, but... what did you make of Hitchcock's comments? We talked a lot about it yesterday. I mean, he played the role like I'm putting in work and you guys aren't, and I care more than you do.
Yeah, I don't.
Then he tried to backtrack, though.
Was
who cares about the backtrack?
I didn't follow it all that closely, the follow-up comment, and he, whatever. At the end of the day, it's not a great situation. You know, the wheels have been off for most of the season, even though they've got this faux playoff race in the Western Conference where virtually everybody in the league in the West is in it. So it's a low bar, and teams, I understand why they would strive for it, including the Oilers. But the wheels are off, and I just think, and I understand Hitchcock's frustration because he's obviously trying to whip these guys, and I don't think they're responding to getting whipped because I think they're a beaten crew. And so I don't know that it's necessarily that the players don't care so much as they're not good enough.
Right.
And when you're not good enough...
And you know it.
And you're getting whipped and the wheels are off and everybody's just kind of like, you know, looking around like, it's not my fault.
I'm trying.
But then everybody's sort of, it's not my fault. And you know, and I just can't even imagine what it's like for Connor McDavid, amongst others. He's not the only one, but I know Connor McDavid a little bit. And, you know, I know when he went to Erie as a 16-year-old, and it's interesting because McDavid was a guy, so he gets exceptional player status. He's first overall in the draft. The normal thing, even if you're exceptional, is a lot of guys in the OHL draft, they kind of call their shot for first overall. They don't like the look. And at the time, Erie was a bad outpost in the OHL. They weren't a very good franchise. They'd had glory days long before that when guys like Brian Boyes and others and Mike Rupp and others had played on the team. But they were a bad team for a long period of time, and a lot of kids didn't want to go there. And McDavid's attitude was, hey, man, if I'm signing up for exceptional status and I'm the first guy and they got the first pick, mm-hmm. I'm going and I'm going to turn this franchise around. And he did. And it was the same thing in the NHL draft where people were saying, you know, people were trying to read into his body language the night Edmonton won the lottery. And he was like, no, man, I'm good. Like, I'll go anywhere and I'll, you know, I'm just honored to go in the National Hockey League and play. He's a kid who just like, and even so in Erie, for the first year and a half when they lost a lot more than they won, he was, you know, he had a real tough time accepting that. I wrote about it in my book, and his dad was quoted as saying, I had to go down a bunch of times and kind of talk him off the ledge because they'd lose, and he was, I can't take this anymore. And I can't even imagine what it's like to be in year four in the National Hockey League, especially 2 years ago when you thought they turned the corner and they were on their way. And instead, it's like, we don't have a general manager, we don't have a coach right now, like full-time, and we don't know what the prospects are going to be, and how are they going to fix this? And he's there like, man, I got an eight-year deal, year one of an eight-year deal. Let's get after it, boys.
Right. Well, guys in the room, they know better than anybody else. They know what they have and what their capabilities are. Bob McKenzie, your Hockey Insider in studio. What's your read on what happened in Vancouver last night? Mikey DiPietro, because of all the goaltending issues, but I get the impression Jim Benning's taken a lot of bullets in his market today because DiPietro's a junior goalie. He's got to play. They're fighting for playoff position. It's San Jose. Like, this wasn't a layup game against the worst team in the league, and he got shelled last night.
Yeah, he did. He didn't get... And the funny thing is, everybody's talking about him getting shelled. The first three goals were not his fault at all. Like, not one of them.
Timo Meier, the first one in the slot, first left one, all alone.
Point blank right in the Main slot. Street, yeah. Second one, Hutton deflects a shot at the last second, and it goes off DiPietro's blocker and over his head into the net. And the third one was a deflection right on the doorstep. You got no chance. So, not a chance in the world. So, you know, in a perfect world, the Canucks should have and could have maybe had more depth in the organization. But I think it was late December, Richard Bachman went down for the year. They made a trade where they traded Nilsson away, but they got Mike McKenna back. And then Mike McKenna got picked up on waivers because of the crazy
Philly
goalie turnstile. They've gone through eight there this year. And then so they've been going with Demko and Markstrom. And then Demko got hurt, and he's out for another week, 10 days. And then Markstrom gets a day-to-day injury. And so they had to play the kid. And it's not an advisable thing, but, I mean, it is what it is. So they went out and they made the deal this morning, and they got Merrick Mazinets from the New York Rangers. Now, my understanding is he's on his way to Vancouver very quickly right now because tomorrow morning he's got to get his immigration stuff processed so that he can hop on a plane and fly to Anaheim so he can start the game tomorrow night so they don't have to start DiPietro in a second consecutive game. Not ideal, but that's the when you go from an American team to a Canadian team, you got to get immigration, a work visa. And in order to get that work visa, you must apply for it in Canada, is my understanding. So it's going to be a quick turnaround for him.
How does the NHL explain Evgeny Malkin only getting one game for that act last night?
Because he missed... Basically, clip the edge of the guy's helmet. If he hits him flush in the face and the guy's orbital bone is broken, 5, 10, 15, take your pick. But he basically missed with a one-handed slash. I'm not minimizing it, but I mean...
He didn't try to miss, though. Like, no, no. To me, he tried to connect. He tried to get him
right in the head. Yeah, but, you know, I mean, Ryan Johansson got two games, and he had two hands on the stick, and he came down pretty forcefully.
Right. I thought that was a joke. Yeah. I thought he should have got way more than
and
that.
And so... You know, it goes back to the old school, the NHL. If you look at stick foul penalties, I mean, outside of, you know, the Thomas Sandstrom getting, you know, the vicious cross check and broken jaw and what have you, most of the stick fouls in the National Hockey League, if they don't result in a really significant damage, you're talking one, two, three, four games or whatever.
Right. I just don't, you know, anyone that's played the sport, there's a big difference between a hit that goes awry and a stick swinging maneuver. Where
they talk about non-hockey plays. That's the definition of a non-hockey play.
Everyone like knows how to control this. Exactly. He wasn't off balance. No, he knew exactly
what it was
doing.
Even more clear than that because it wasn't like he just... It wasn't like he was just skating down the ice and he decided, I'm going to whack somebody in the head with my stick. He got punched in the back of the head, and it was a retaliation for getting punched in the back of the head. So, you know, and again, so there's provocation, but then the response was obviously not measured in terms of what he did, and he's very fortunate that he didn't hit pay dirt on
Raffle last night.
On Raffle's head.
Bob McKenzie, our hockey insider in studio, David Pastrnak. Something went on Sunday night, and in the end, the details, I guess, it doesn't really matter because he's out for a minimum of 3 weeks.
If there was an email chain where I sent one to Bob or you and said, gentlemen, I had a function at 11:30, I returned to my transportation, and now my thumb...
my ligament is damaged to the point where I need surgery. I'll see you in a minimum of 3 weeks.
You guys would...
I would call foul on that, well, personally, but... anyway, I mean, the details don't matter. He's out.
Doesn't matter. Yeah, exactly.
So what happened?
Brian Leetch getting out of a cab. There've been all sorts of those ones over the years. You know, and it's funny that, you know, it's painstaking the press release when they were getting car service or whatever. So everybody's
incredibly detailed.
And the time had to be 11:30. It was like, wasn't a second over. 11.
But it's like you got to kind of come. But even if what you do in those situations by including more detail than you otherwise would. Funny thing is they included the fact that it was 11:30 and that he was getting a ride.
Yep.
And now they're saying he'll be reevaluated in 2 weeks. We don't even know how long he's out.
Right.
It could be four.
We think
it could be six.
Year?
Well, Bob,
he's playing again this year, but when clubs speak for he'll be reevaluated in 2 weeks, there's two types of injuries that go longer than 2 weeks. One is called 2 to 4, and one is called 4 to 6.
Yeah.
So some number greater than two. It's not a great loss at a time when you're already looking for a scoring winger on the second line and a third line center in terms of feeling the need to add to bolster your team so that you try to snag one of those two divisional spots and don't get overtaken by the Montreal Canadiens or anybody else and drop down to a wild card spot.
Right. Well, and I'm sure they're trying to chase the Maple Leafs too. Why would you not
be? Exactly.
You're trying to pursue, you know, the home ice in the first round. Bob McKenzie, your hockey insider in studio. In terms of the Maple Leafs, you know, we talk about them constantly leading up to the trade deadline. I'm not bracing myself for them making another move on the back end that would knock out one of these top six. I don't personally see it. I think they're probably happy with the Muzzin deal. They should be. I know there's been a lot of smoke about Pesci and someone else in Carolina, but someone's got to leave for that to happen. Like Zaitsev would have to go, or Hainsey would have to go.
Yeah, well, and then they've got to ask themselves too. I mean, let's say it's Pesci that they've got eyes for, Carolina's going to want one of Johnsson or Kapanen.
Mm-hmm.
They are. You know, so then you start getting into more convoluted sort of dream scenarios, and you're like, okay, is there a way you could do this for not Johnsson or Kapanen? Could you, if you feel like Pesci's an upgrade on Zaitsev, can you include Zaitsev in the package? And by the way, I'm not suggesting that these talks have happened. From my understanding, nothing has been, the peanut has not been pushed any further down the road with Toronto and Carolina. Let me qualify that right now. Do I believe that they're going to continue to talk and talk again? Absolutely. I wouldn't be surprised. But, you know, in the hypothetical sense, if I'm looking at it from the outside in, I'm saying, okay, well, could you, if you perceive Pesci to be an upgrade on Zaitsev, could you include Zaitsev in the package plus something else? Is it Connor Brown? Is it a draft pick? Is it Connor Brown and a draft pick? Or does Carolina say, no, we want Kapanen or Johnsson for a top four right shot defenseman that's got multiple years
and
left?
Why wouldn't they?
At a club friendly number. That's the price. And then it becomes, well, okay, so do we want to do that deal? Are we that excited about Pesci or somebody like him that we're going to give up one of our prime young players who we might not be able to afford long term but don't have any issue with certainly right now and maybe not even next year? Can we move another defenseman? Can we move a Zaitsev? Can we move a Hainsey? And again, it starts to, you know, now you're starting
complicated,
to get in,
yeah.
Now you're getting into real complications, and it might come back that they say, yeah, you know what? What you see is what you get.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're going to do. But they are going to, they're going to try and crack that nut and see if they can upgrade the defense. And they're going to try and crack that nut and see if they can upgrade up front. But everybody's so focused on it's got to be Simmons, it's got to be Ferland. And if it's a first-round pick and a prospect for those guys, the Leafs aren't going to do that.
No, why would
for a
they?
Rental. So then the question becomes, who out there is there, and I don't have the answer to that question right now, but who out there is there that could duplicate a lot of what Simmons and Ferland bring to the dance but you could get much lower case, lower value for a much lesser price rental. And does that make sense to bring somebody in to fill that role? And but keep in mind, too, so let's say you do bring one of those guys in. Who do you take out of the lineup?
For me, it's Par Lindholm. That's the only guy. So you're talking about a
fourth line. So now you're talking
player.
About a fourth line.
That's it.
Yeah. So how, and, you know...
Yeah. You're not giving up much for a fourth line. Yeah.
And how excited is Wayne Simmons or Michael Ferland or, hey, we got you. You're on the fourth line.
Right. But I think that's the reality.
You're playing with Freddie and whoever.
Yeah. I don't see what other spot are they going to take.
Yeah.
Freddie, the GOAT's locked in?
Well, I don't know if the GOAT's locked in. I could see an improvement there. But I think, on the left side, even though Johnson is playing on the fourth line, he's playing better than that. And Marlowe, they're not going to play on the fourth line. Hyman clearly isn't playing on the fourth line.
Nope.
And Marner, Nylander, Kapanen, if they're all here, they're playing in the top
Their top nine's more or less set.
Yeah, exactly.
And, as I say, you might want an upgrade on Freddie, but all I know is whoever's on the fourth line next year, they're making $600,000 or $700,000 is what they're making.
Yeah, that's a flat fact.
Yeah,
what does Colorado do?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think Joe's a pretty conservative GM for the most part, Sakic. So I don't see him blowing his brains out on rentals, but I think it's important for them to make the playoffs. So if the prices come down and they could find the right guy to fill this hole or that hole, and they obviously need secondary scoring behind the big boys. But, they've got Cale Makar coming out of college, and he might be a Hobey Baker winner. And, he's a dynamic offensive presence. We saw him at the World Juniors last year. Can really shoot a puck
on
a power play. Yeah. And he's obviously got defensive deficiencies, but, he's so good offensively, you'll say, we'll teach him that part in time. So, he'll come out when UMass's season ends, whenever that is. So I think it's probably stick to the game plan, but, you look at Nathan MacKinnon sniffing and snorting up there and trying to get his team, carry his team into the playoffs. He might be looking around and saying, a little help here would be good. We're doing what we can, but there's only so many of us. Let's pick that up a little bit. But those are the problems that you run into where you don't want to give up. They got a lot of young assets. You don't want to give those up because it's the future of your team. But kind of important to make the playoffs there this year.
Well, you also got Ottawa's first-round pick in your own. So even if they drop, I would have to think, leading up to the draft, that's the team people are going to be focused on, because let's say Ottawa wins the lottery. They hand over the first overall pick. At this point, they're going to have the best odds. Colorado continues to plummet, and they pick like fifth. First and fifth pick, all those other prospects you just mentioned. I mean, if they wanted to get better pretty quickly via a big trade, they could do it. I mean, they'd have all the means.
Or, if you're picking first and fifth, two really good players.
Right.
Yeah. Like the
remember Boston had Thornton and Samsonov, I think, in the same draft, wasn't it? In the top 10?
Yeah.
That worked out pretty well. We'll see. All right, Bob.
All right, boys. Thanks.
Good seeing you, man. Bob McKenzie, our TSN Hockey Insider.
I think that Samsonov pick was part of the Glenn Wesley.
Was it?
Carolina deal?
I think that was the same draft. It was Thornton and Samsonov in the same draft, wasn't it? They had like first and fifth pick or first and eighth or something like that.
I think Carolina gave up like three or four first rounders for Glenn Wesley.
Well, got his number retired.
Yes, he did.
We'll get to our best bets brought to you by ProLine. Don't forget that the TSN 1050's trade deadline coverage is brought to you by your Ontario Subaru dealers. Subaru, confidence in motion. And tee up the Leaf game one more time. Leafs, Colorado tonight. You can hear it right here on TSN 1050. All right, time now for our best bets brought to you by ProLine. Chicago is paying 270 tonight in Boston. Chicago's been playing well. The Bruins, they're coming off the Pasternak injury, 270.
Yeah, Patty Kane's been on fire.
I'm on the Blackhawks tonight.
I love that one, the Pasternak injury.
The soap opera that is David Pasternak. Something happened. Something happened on Sunday night at approximately 11:30 p.m.
Oh, I think exactly 11:30.
When you fall down, you don't fall on your thumb, man. Like your elbows, your shoulders, your like maybe your coconut.
Mm-hmm.
You don't fall on your thumb.
Maybe he's got weak thumbs.
11:30 on his way to his transportation, leaving a team function.
He got thumbed.
Yeah.
He totally got it caught in the car door when he went to open it. Body went down, thumb stood there. He just stayed there.
I'm on Buffalo tonight. I think they're playing the Islanders. Buffalo needs to get going here. Jack Eichel's starting to lose it. Sam Reinhart is losing it. I think they'll figure it out tonight. And Winnipeg's at home against the Rangers. I'm on Winnipeg. Throw down 20. You can score 140. You can find my picks on Twitter at TSN 1050 Radio and get way into the game with ProLine. It's the sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. ProLine, get way into the game. So we're off to Vegas tomorrow. Dutchie, you've been down there many a time.
Yes, I have.
Oh, you've been down there many times, but we're going to be in the sportsbook at MGM, I think, tomorrow afternoon.
Good for you.
I'm thinking we'll
light that rocket. I know a good bail bondsman if you need it. I'll text it to you.
Please do.
Hopefully.
I've never been to a sports book. I don't know what you just sit and have some beers and just bet on sports.
Yeah.
Like it's as simple as that.
Yeah. But big the thing screens is, everywhere.
They're generally not live sports. You
will
know?
We get there in time to watch the Oilers Penguins?
Yeah, oh yeah. We should be there.
We'll just get there and hammer bets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm on the Penguins tomorrow night. How could you? Well, maybe the over tomorrow night. I'm leaning towards the over. We'll see what the number's at, but. It's only a couple of games. There'll be NBA games going on.
I'll just tell you this. I know nothing about that gambling stuff. I'll take your advice, and if I miss,
you'll blame me.
Yeah, and I'm not exactly happy either.
We'll pool our money together, and we'll somehow get Mullen involved. We'll get Noodles involved.
Get some props going.
Yeah, that's right.
Why not, man?
Props are great. Like you can find track. Like they'll have live betting. You know, based on the ponies. Like somewhere in the world, there will be a racetrack that's up and humming.
Oh, it's yeah, absolutely. It's going to be Australia. It could be Japan.
It could be
Great Britain. And so do I.
I love the Japanese racetrack, man. I'm just going to hammer it tomorrow night.
Yeah, you guys are going to win.
I got to read. His mutter was a mutter in Japan. I am going to hammer the Japanese racetrack tomorrow.
That's what happens. You just start sprinkling everywhere.
Yeah.
You're just trying to, especially when you get in that hole early. Damn, that's a bad hole to be in.
Sometimes you got to dig yourself out.
My signature move, if I have a good day, I don't gamble big, but you win a couple grand. On the way out, you just drop it on red or black, and then it's all gone. Or you double up, and then you walk out. And
you feel like $1 million.
It's the stupidest move ever. Yeah. All your winnings on one on the way out.
No. If I work for it, I don't do it. I just put that in a pocket, and I'm just so... I never
win,
though.
Don't you think the golden rule is you double your money, you'd walk out?
Yeah. Yes, you should be. If you have self-control, that should be the play.
Like $500, you got $1,000 on the table, you walk out.
Absolutely, no. You should be doing that. No. I like to bet like a big bet first, like right when I get there to kind of set a tone, but it can totally ruin your experience.
It's the worst, man.
It ruins everything.
Yeah. Like dude, you're in a hole early... The last two times I went there,
but
man. I'm borrowing a Marlboro from some lady. I'm getting the waitress. You're getting double Ryan Cokes. It's a slippery slope.
But if
man.
You think positive and you win early, then you're on a heater. And then you start to feel it in Vegas.
Oh yeah,
it's all about playing the odds.
Then
buddy.
You go out.
That's right. All right.
We're
going to
be coming at you from Vegas on Thursday. Who cares who's in here
Somebody
tomorrow?
Will be in here tomorrow at 4 p.m., but we will be back live from Vegas at 4 p.m. on Thursday.
We'll chat then.